It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this episode of Senior Talk. There is an exciting new resource that provides information not just for rural health providers, but also for patients and their caregivers. The Rural Dementia Training Project was funded by a grant secured by Senator Susan Collins. It will help train rural providers such as primary care providers, nurse practitioners, family nurse practitioners, nurses, and others in how to tell the difference between normal cognitive aging versus early dementia or Alzheimer's. My guest today is Dr. Clifford Singer. He is a psychiatrist and geriatrician who's been at Northern Light Acadia Hospital since 2010. He is the chief of the Center for Geriatric Cognitive and Mental Health at Acadia and a research professor at UMaine. He leads a multidisciplinary team at Acadia's Mood and Memory Clinic. And if you want to check that out, go to northernlighthealth.org/memory and aging. northernlighthealth.org/memory and aging, and you'll get a lot of information about that. He also directs the Robert C. Strauss Neurocognitive Research Program, which is the largest Alzheimer's disease clinical trials program in Maine, with collaborators at the University of Maine, the Jackson Lab in Bar Harbor, and Massachusetts General Hospital. Impressively, Dr. Singer has been named to the Best Doctors in America list by peers every year since 2004. That's 21 years, people. He has received numerous awards for research and clinical work with older adults. Dr. Singer, welcome, and thank you so much for being here. It is an honor to talk to you.
Well, thanks for asking me, Carol. It's fun to be here. Thank you.
First, will you explain the difference between normal cognitive aging versus early dementia or Alzheimer's?
Yes, it's a little tricky because some of the things that are perfectly normal and common in aging related to memory and thinking ability can seem like dementia. It can be very frustrating, and people worry about forgetting names and retrieving nouns and remembering where they put things or remembering to do things. And they think, surely this is the first sign of something that's going to progress to dementia. But those kinds of things, as frustrating as they are, particularly coming up with names of people, are generally benign, but it's a slippery slope a little bit when it gets to be frequent and a person starts forgetting conversations and putting things in the wrong place and not remembering how to get to familiar places and not knowing how to do some simple chores that they've always been able to do. That's when you're starting to cross a line into something more profound that will require a clinical assessment.
When should you see your doctor if you're starting to have any of these symptoms? I know from personal experience, as I'm in my 60s, occasionally, I cannot find the word I want, and it is very frustrating and kind of scary.
That's a good example of just normal cognitive aging, and it has no predictive value for progressing to dementia.
Well, that's a relief. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I try to tell myself that all the time when I'm having trouble coming up with a person's name, which is frequent. So that has to do with a part of the brain that is not as efficient as it was when we were younger. But our long-term memories and our reasoning, judgment, and thinking ability are still really good deep into old age until there is some pathologic process or disease process coming along. So when should a person be evaluated? So there is a Medicare benefit called the annual wellness visit, and that you're supposed to have some sort of cognitive test or screening done at the annual wellness visit. Our project, the Rural Dementia Training Care Project, is providing tools for providers in our system and education for people throughout Maine in the primary care setting, what kind of screening tools to use, and what the next steps would be if a person doesn't perform well on the screening tests. Or if a provider thinks the screening test wasn't an accurate result and a more detailed assessment is required. Either one, either they fail the screening test or the provider thinks, well, there's something more here than meets the eye on the screening test. And so they should go to the secondary level. These tests, these screening tests and the second level tests are pretty simple. They're most people have heard of these tests by now. The screening tests take about 5 or 10 minutes. The second level tests, we recommend the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, the MoCA, which is becoming better known to people, as the secondary level test. That takes about 15 minutes. The interpretation of these tests, though, is where special training is helpful. So we're trying to provide that special training to people. Also, speaking with the family or people who know how a person functions in the real world, because a really bright person could perform well on these cognitive tests, but there may be things happening in their day-to-day life that are not normal for them. I mentioned getting lost in a familiar place, asking the same question more than twice in a few minutes. That's my cutoff. If I ask the same thing more than twice, I get worried. There's a host of things that might indicate a more serious problem.
I like the fact that you speak to the family, because I'm sure, I'm assuming that someone who is having one of these tests, maybe they put their game face on and they really give it their best shot so that they do well on the test. But in real life, it may not be indicative of how they really are. Tell me about the Mood and Memory Clinic at Acadia.
We started this when I first arrived here, and overall, it's a clinic within the hospital. It's a hospital-based clinic. We have a geriatric psychiatrist, that's me. We have a neuropsychiatrist who's has special training in behavioral neurology or cognitive neurology. We have two nurse pract actually three nurse practitioners, two neuropsychologists, and I'll explain what they do later. Two nurses, a medical assistant, a social worker student who's starting with us, and support staff. We see, well, 20, 25 people a day. We have we follow probably about 1,000 people over time. We have sadly several hundred people on our wait list. We at one time had a 2-year-long wait to be seen in the clinic, which is totally unacceptable. And that's there was an article in the Bangor Daily News about that, and so and that's what Senator Collins saw, and she called me, and we asked me to put in a proposal that she could get into the Senate Appropriations budget for 2023, I think, and then that budget was approved. The money went to a federal agency called the Health Resources Service Administration, HRSA. We had to put in a full proposal. HRSA funded us with the money appropriated by Congress through Senator Collins' actions. And we've been undertaking this very large project in an attempt to improve the skills of primary care providers and others throughout the state to be less reliant on us, because we have a good capacity. We have excellent provider dementia specialists here, but there's only so many of us, and the need is growing so rapidly in Maine. To see people like us, we really need to try to make sure that we're seeing people who really need our level of expertise, and that more straightforward situations where people might need just a sleep study or some medication adjusted, or any other number of other things that a primary care provider could help with, don't have to take up a spot on our wait list, that should go to somebody with a more complex or subtle issue.
We're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive deep into the Rural Dementia Training Project, how it works, how he plans to roll this out. Stay with us. We will be right back right after this. There's lots more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Clifford Singer. We are going to discuss the Rural Dementia Training Project and how it actually works, how far it will reach, rurally speaking. And as I understand it, Dr. Singer, there are three objectives to the Rural Dementia Training Project. So tell me about that and what you hope to gain from this, and how far will it really go? Maine is a large state, or very rurally large.
Yeah, it has statewide reach, really. And it's consistent with the revised Maine State Plan for Alzheimer's disease developed by the clinical Maine Center for Disease Control, the Maine CDC. I was part of writing that revised state plan, and so I made sure that this federally grant funded project that we're doing helps move the state plan along. The first objective is to improve or provide additional training for primary care providers, nurses, social workers, and nursing assistants in outpatient clinics, primary care clinics, in hospitals, in nursing homes, and assisted living facilities throughout Maine. Providing detailed and frequent educational opportunities for diagnosing dementia and providing care at all levels of dementia, not just Alzheimer's disease, but all the different conditions that can cause cognitive decline in dementia. We have held two large conferences last May and June. We have a monthly conference that people can attend remotely. Those first two conferences in May and June were on site, one in Bar Harbor, one in Orono. They were well attended and really popular, and I think people got a lot out of them. The monthly case conference is an opportunity for people to present patients they're seeing in the outpatient setting to get help with diagnosis and treatment planning. We're also planning a roadshow of going around to different nursing homes and assisted living facilities and educating people about brain behavior relationships and what happens to people's brains and behavior as they develop dementia. So we are developing also web-based resources that people can rely on to help them with diagnosis and developing treatment plans for people with dementia. So all of this is meant to reduce reliance on dementia specialists.
Because there are very few of dementia specialists,
There are very few of us, and we have
right?
a long wait list to get in, and we're trying to reduce that wait list.
How many healthcare professionals are you hoping to educate and train for this? As many
Well,
as possible, I assume.
as many as possible. We had a good turnout at both of the on-site conferences. Our monthly case conference only gets a few people at a time, about a dozen or so. There is another effort through Maine Health, a monthly case conference called Project Echo, that also reaches probably about two dozen people. The problem with education conferences like these, though, is it's a little bit of a Coles to Newcastle problem. You're generally reaching people who have interest and knowledge already, but many of them have just a little bit of knowledge, but they have interest, and so programs like ours definitely deepen their knowledge and their skills. Reaching people who are less interested or just too busy to attend, they've got so many other priorities in terms of education. It's hard to reach everybody, but we're going to keep at it and do our best. I think our web-based resources will also broaden our reach. So we'll keep at it.
I read that you're trying to create a registry for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related disorder. What does that mean?
So we've had a registry called MENA, the Maine Initiative for Neurologic Aging and Health, MENA.
Cute.
We've had that for a while. We have about 700 or 800 people on our registry, and we do occasional webinars at least annually, and then we do occasional newsletters to keep people informed about topics related to healthy brain aging. And research opportunities to participate in studies in Maine, people can contribute to or maybe learn about their own brain health. There are two other registries in Maine, one at University of New England, one at University of Maine. Ours is the only one that's dedicated to healthy brain aging, but the others are useful to belong to for people just interested in healthy aging. These registries don't cost anything, and it's one way to stay in touch with what's happening in Maine related to healthy aging. I would encourage anybody to, and you don't have to be an older adult. We're interested in a lot of things that you can do to reduce your risk of dementia later in life start early in life. So we encourage younger people to join MENA as well.
Okay, I want to hear more about that. So we're going to take a break right now and dive into exactly what you said, how you can protect yourself. And also, when someone is, they have this healthcare provider do the assessment, what are the next steps on that, depending on what the diagnosis is? Stay with us. We have lots more to come with Dr. Singer. We'll be right back right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Clifford Singer. So when we left, you discussed things that people can do to keep their brain healthy. But what I want to get into that. I have a lot to unpack in a short amount of time. When someone, let's say you've got your providers trained, your NPs and family nurse practitioners and around the state, and they do an assessment of someone, what happens then? Let's say that they find it's general aging, you're getting older, you're going to forget things, or it is early onset, or maybe not so early, depending on the person's age, or the level of dementia they may have. What happens then? And if it How do you keep your brain healthy? Because we all see the ads on TV for these vitamins that are supposed to supercharge your brain. I realize that's a lot, but take it away.
Okay, let me start on the first section. What does the provider do, or what should you expect your provider to do? So when a person comes with a memory or cognitive complaint, I have brain fog, I can't remember things, I'm forgetting all the time, a we are training people, and many providers are already pretty knowledgeable about what tools to use to do the assessment. Whether or not a person screen fails at the first assessment, if a provider, a physician, nurse practitioner, PA, whoever, psychologist thinks that they have that this is potentially a real problem, then they need to do the second level testing, which is a little more detailed, or they need to send a person for more detailed assessment. Generally, an occupational therapist or a neuropsychologist for more detailed assessment. But after the medical provider, the primary care provider, does the something like the Montreal Cognitive Assessment and sees a potential problem, they need to do a series of steps. There's blood work to be done. There's potentially a brain scan that should be done. There is potentially a sleep study that might be done. Going down the list of things that might be contributing, general health things that might be contributing to cognitive or memory problems before you get to brain disorders themselves.
Now,
And
when the, can someone do that, though? I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to know you. They've gotten this assessment, and it's recommended that they do all of these other things. Given that you have a wait list, and there's wait lists pretty much everywhere, when could someone expect to have that happen?
well, everyone with Medicare should go through some of this screening at their annual wellness visit, or if they come with a new complaint of memory or cognitive problems. They should go through this testing, this very simple screening and testing, and then the provider will order some tests or a referral to a specialist. There are other things that need to be followed up on. Is this depression? Is it a sleep disorder? Is it a nutritional deficiency? Is it a hormonal problem? Is it a heart problem? Everything in the body can affect the brain. And so you have to go through all the different possibilities pretty quick to do all those screens before you end up with, okay, this could be a brain disorder. And then there's a whole series of decisions and testing that follows, most of which can be done in the primary care setting, some of which do require a specialist, some sort of neurologic, psychiatric, neuropsychological specialist. But we're trying to help the primary care provider be more self-sufficient in this. There's now even blood tests that are able to identify Alzheimer's disease at very early stages when treatment of Alzheimer's disease can have the biggest impact
That is
in
incredible news.
slowing the progression to dementia.
Sure. We are just about out of time, but I want to get into what can someone do? Do you take the vitamins you see on TV? What are ways to help your brain from either slipping into decline or developing Alzheimer's or cognitive? We're just about out of time, but I think this is really important.
Most the evidence for most of the supplements that are promoted is pretty weak. These supplements can be very expensive. Some are benign, some are potentially helpful, but some are fairly expensive, and the evidence for their efficacy is weak. So we generally discourage people from using too many supplements. But talk to your doctor. They may have, or nurse practitioner or PA, they may have a different opinion. Some supplements, there's some value to, but there's a lot of information out there that overpromises. As far as what is evidence-based for slowing cognitive decline, we do know that diets such as the Mediterranean diet, which is whole grains, vegetable oils, lots of fruits and vegetables, not a lot of animal fat, minimal animal fat, we know that that slows the rate of decline and slows the rate of change from mild memory problems to dementia. So we recommend a Mediterranean style diet that's low inflammatory, low in animal fats. Also, physical activity, very important. Doesn't have to be 10 steps, 10,000 steps a day. Even 4,000 steps a day, better than nothing. Even 2,000 steps a day is better than being sedentary all the time. And sitting for long periods of time is also bad. Even if you can't be that physically active, at least get up every hour, hour and a half or so, and move around and stretch. Social engagement and cognitive activity and 7 hours of sleep a night on average, these are the recipes for healthy brain aging.
Dr. Singer, that is fabulous information that I certainly am going to incorporate, and I'm sure my listeners will as well. You are welcome back anytime to discuss this more. The website is northernlighthealth.org/memory and aging, northernlighthealth.org/memory and aging. Thank you again for being here. You are a wealth of information, and I do appreciate it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.